Hello there, I'm Rob, and you're listening to the Black Country Talking News. And this week's edition is for the 15th of September, 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, Alexa, play Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. I'm reading this week. I have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Craig, Liz, Helen, Ed, Heather, Ian, Nicola, Simon, Angela, Christine, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, an opportunity to learn how to play golf with a visual impairment, the weather, an article on the Battle of Britain, and rounding all that off, we get to hear Graham Fisher's In My Opinion. To start, however, we have the following message. The Beacon Centre is pleased to announce that our gym within the Lifestyle Centre is now back open, and we're looking forward to welcoming people back. We have been lucky to receive some funding over the last couple of months, which have enabled us to revamp the gym, including laying a new floor, allowing us to have an area for equipment and a soft area for group and individual sessions. The funding has also enabled us to purchase new equipment, including bikes, rowers, weights, benches, treadmills, and session equipment such as blaze pods, power bands, and balance balls. Rob Arnold joined our team a couple of weeks ago and is a self-employed personal trainer, and he will be available to assess individuals, set plans, and work with you to achieve your goals, whether that be fitness, weight loss, or mobility. Members at the Lifestyle Centre are able to use the gym facilities as a part of their package at no extra cost, while those wishing to only access the gym will incur some fees. For more information on using the gym or becoming a Lifestyle member, please contact Beacon on 01902 880 111 and ask to speak to Rob Arnold or Becky Green. Alternatively, their email addresses are rarnold@beaconvision.org or bgreen@beaconvision.org. Up now with our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and I will reveal the answer later along with the usual quiz answers. Now we head over to our first block of local news, brought to us by Ian, Angela, Ed, Liz, and first up, it's Christine.
There are more than 50 areas in the country where patients are more likely to receive quicker hospital treatment than in the Black Country, new figures have shown. The Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group was ranked 54th out of 113 organisations in terms of how many people were treated during June. It represented an improvement from April, when it was ranked 66th. During June, 4.74 people per 100,000 of the population received NHS treatment, meaning the CCG was ranked roughly halfway between best and worst in the country. It comes amid a huge backlog of NHS treatment caused by the pandemic. CCGs in Cannock and Stafford were both ranked inside the top 10 in the country, according to the figures from NHS England, though their lower populations means there is less of a demand for services. It means people living in Staffordshire are currently among the most likely to receive non-urgent NHS treatment in quick time. Experts said the figures highlighted the regional disparities in healthcare. Thousands of operations have been delayed due to COVID, with hospitals now working to tackle the backlog by prioritising those most in need. There are concerns about the impact on those with serious conditions, such as cancer, who either could not or decided not to seek treatment during the height of the pandemic. Barbara Harpham, chair of the Medical Technology Group, which released the figures, said, "The regional disparities that were present before the COVID pandemic, resulting from arbitrary decision-making from commissioners, have only been exacerbated by the pandemic. All patients, no matter where they live, deserve the same access to diagnostic tests and interventions. Everyone needs to be treated fairly and equitably as the NHS battles to recover from the enormous impact of COVID."
Asylum seekers have been dumped in a Wolverhampton hotel against the wishes of the council. Around 200 asylum seekers are currently being housed in the Britannia Hotel in Wolverhampton city centre as part of the Home Office's dispersal programme. Wolverhampton Council leader Ian Brookfield said some asylum seekers had arrived at the hotel in a terrible state. Wolverhampton Council was told several weeks ago that Serco, which runs the Home Office contract for the dispersal scheme, was going to house asylum seekers at the hotel on Lichfield Street. Mr. Brookfield said after a short injunction, the move went ahead despite the opposition of the council, which raised concerns over safety and welfare. He said, "This is a hidden issue and it is not just impacting Wolverhampton, it's Birmingham, Walsall, Dudley and Coventry. It is happening on a huge scale and it proves that the scheme is broken. We are bearing the brunt. We don't know where these people are from or what help they need." Many of the asylum seekers are said to have arrived in the city with just the clothes on their backs, and outside the hotel, young men congregate as washing hangs out of windows. It comes as pressure mounts on the Home Office to find accommodation to deal with the high number of migrants crossing the English Channel. Mr. Brookfield branded the dispersal programme unfair and said the West Midlands Combined Authority area was getting more than our fair share of asylum seekers. "Some of them have arrived here in a terrible state. There's people with no clothes, no nappies for the kids. We know Serco are running this, but they could at least put a little bit of humanity into it. As a council, we are left out of the whole process. The Home Office needs to work with local authorities so we can help these people."
Further 8 coronavirus deaths have been confirmed in the region's hospitals in the latest figures released by NHS England. It means the total number of deaths in the Black Country, Staffordshire and Birmingham has increased to 7,978. Meanwhile, across the UK there were 191 deaths. 4 deaths were recorded at the University Hospitals of North Midlands NHS Trust, which runs Stafford's County and Royal Stoke University Hospitals, taking the total number of deaths to 1,446. 2 were reported at the University Hospitals of Birmingham NHS Trust, where the toll is at 2,746. And 2 were confirmed at the Walsall Healthcare NHS Trust, which runs Walsall Manor Hospital, where the death toll is 741. No deaths were reported at the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, which runs New Cross Hospital, where the death toll is 852. No deaths were announced at the Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust, which runs Sandwell General and City Hospitals, where the total number of deaths now stands at 1,243, or at the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Russell's Hall Hospital, where the toll is 770. Meanwhile, across the UK, a total of 48,319,435 people have received their first jab, while 43,620,946 have received both jabs. In the Midlands, 7,500,652 have received their first jab, while 6,799,292 have received their second jab.
Dudley residents are being urged to back the bid for the borough to win city status by sharing what they love about their home. A 3-month countdown is on to Dudley's official submission for city status as part of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations next year. To mark the countdown, council chiefs are calling on borough residents to help back the bid by revealing their favourite things about living in the Dudley Borough. Residents' responses will be included in the final submission on December the 8th, with the winners announced next year. People can email cityinthemaking@dudley.gov.uk and also use the hashtag CityofDudleyBid to make their submissions on social media. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of the council, said, "With 3 months to go, we are working hard behind the scenes to pull together the final details of the bid ahead of formal submission in December. We'd like to hear from residents about what they love about living here to make sure we don't miss anything out. We are tremendously proud of our borough and we have huge ambitions for our future. From our medieval Doomsday Book reference back in 1086, not to mention the millions of years of geological history, we have a past that most cities across the world could only dream of and of which we are very proud. But we're also looking to forge a bright new future. We recognise that there is work to do in that regard, but we have a £1 billion regeneration programme which is coming to life as we speak to change the landscape of this fantastic place with new developments our people can be proud of."
The first government headquarters outside London has opened its doors with a pledge to bring decision-making to the heart of the West Midlands. The Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government has opened a new base across two floors of the I-9 building in Wolverhampton city centre. Around 100 staff, including senior civil servants, will be based there from next month, with a further 150 joining them in April, the Ministry said. The office was officially opened by Community Secretary Robert Jenrick, who was serenaded by the choir from Wolverhampton Grammar School performing George Michael's Careless Whisper. He said the site would be far more than just a satellite office and would, for the first time, bring decision-making to the heart of the region. "This is a really important milestone for the city and the wider region," Mr. Jenrick said. "It means that young people growing up here can access very high-quality jobs and play a role in making national decisions as part of government. It is very important to us as part of our levelling up agenda that we take decision making out of Whitehall and broaden the pool of decision makers. This will be the first government office outside Whitehall and the first office where ministers will be based and holding meetings. We look forward to welcoming staff to the office and working here myself along with other ministers." Asked if it was possible that a cabinet meeting could take place in the city, Mr. Jenrick said, "Yes, absolutely. Wolverhampton is quite well represented within the Cabinet, as the Prime Minister had his first job at the Express and Star and is very fond of Wolverhampton." The office, which will operate alongside the Ministry's London base, is part of government plans to shift focus away from Westminster.
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre. Well, another week has gone by, and I'm back with another update of everything that's been happening at the charity. This week, we're starting with a really nice story. So a few days ago, we were delighted to welcome some very special visitors to Beacon, the amazing team behind the J.W. Hunt Cup. They dropped in to donate an incredible £7,000, which they've raised despite the historic football competition being unable to play during the pandemic. So we're really excited to tell you that the contest, which has raised 369,000 in aid of Beacon since 1926, is kicking off again this month. And we wish the teams involved the very best of luck. We'd like to say thank you as well to everyone involved in the Cup for their amazing support of people with sight loss. It's just incredible, isn't it, really? Now, as you know, we like to introduce you to members of the team at Beacon, and this week it's the turn of Ian. He's one of our lifestyle coordinators and loves making a difference for people with sight loss. The team run a range of activities, both virtual and face-to-face, that are designed to help you get the most out of life, whatever your level of sight loss. Ian told us, "I really enjoy improving people's independence through sport and other activities and knowing what a massive difference it makes to their lives." If you'd like to find out more about what our team can do for you, get in touch. The number's 01902 880 111. You can also email us on inquiries@beaconvision.org. as well as some amazing team members, we're also fortunate to have some incredible volunteers at Beacon. We've got about 300 in total, and over 50 of them have a disability. There are some incredible benefits to volunteering, including the chance to gain confidence, make a difference, learn new skills, and meet new people. So why not come and join our volunteers and see what difference you can make? One area where you can really make a difference is our telephone befriending service, where all you have to do is pick up the phone and you could change somebody's life. Wow. If you'd like to find out more, give us a ring, 01902 880111, or email people@beaconvision.org. That's people@beaconvision.org. Last up this week, we want to know what's holding you back. If you've got a disability and you want to find work or improve your skills, but you don't know where to start, well, our expect team can help. In the past 2 months, we've supported 5 people into employment and a further 8 to start training programmes. If you'd like to join them, get in touch. You can email inquiries@beaconvision.org. That's inquiries@beaconvision.org, or call us on 01902 880 111. Our Bridges and Evolve projects are funded by the European Social Fund and the National Lottery Community Fund. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll be back to catch up with you all again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the update, Helen. Up now, we go over to some more local news. And starting us off, we have Angela.
A new national walking trail through the West Midlands has been proposed as part of the first ever plan to protect the region's natural environment. The West Midlands Combined Authority's Natural Environment Plan aims to enhance biodiversity, protect endangered species, and improve access to green spaces and waterways for residents. The 5-year plan also highlights the impacts of the COVID pandemic on urban areas with little access to green spaces. Announcing the plan in Stourbridge, West Midlands Mayor Andy Street and Solihull Council Leader Ian Courts said it would underpin the region's efforts to hit net zero by 2041. Mr Street said, "During lockdown, we all realised the importance of green spaces and how these areas, including our waterways, are key to our natural environment, whilst also really benefiting our physical and mental well-being. That's why we've drawn up our natural environment plan, which sets out how we're going to improve and maintain these critical spaces across the West Midlands. The plan also recognises how the West Midlands natural environment holds huge potential to mitigate the effects of climate change, from reducing the risk of flooding to directly removing carbon dioxide from our atmosphere. Decades of polluting industry and expansive development on our green belt has forced wildlife out, but this plan aims to put a stop to the damage by protecting, restoring and enhancing the region's biodiversity for everyone's benefit. Under the plans, everyone will have access to a green space within 300 metres of their home. The plans have been backed by the Wildlife Trust for Birmingham and the Black Country."
A West Bromwich Albion fan has been found guilty of racially abusing footballer Romain Sawyers on social media by suggesting the midfielder should win the Baboon d'Or. Simon Silwood posted the message on a sarcastic fan zone Facebook group titled "Romain Sawyers Ballon d'Or" following his team's 5-0 defeat to Manchester City at the Hawthorns on January the 26th, the Walsall Magistrates Court was told. The 50-year-old denied the offence and told police his message on the group was stupid, not racial, and said autocorrect had changed the word buffoon to baboon. On Thursday, District Judge Bryony Clark said Silwood was not a credible witness, adding that the defendant meant the post to be grossly offensive. The court heard that Sawyers, who is currently on loan at Stoke City and was reporting a separate alleged racist social media post when he was shown Silwood's message, was left feeling harassed, alarmed and distressed after reading it. The defendant was charged following an investigation carried out by PC Stuart Ward, who is the UK's first dedicated hate crime officer within a football unit. Following the trial, a spokesman for West Bromwich Albion Football Club said, "The club welcomes the guilty verdict and has issued a lifetime ban to the person in question. West Bromwich Albion has a proud history of fighting all forms of discrimination, and our message to supporters is clear. Racism is wholly unacceptable and will not be tolerated by the club. We will continue to work with West Midlands Police to ensure all instances of racism, either at the Hawthorns or online, are reported. Anyone who is found guilty of such an offence will be banned from the club for life. Albion will continue to campaign for social media companies to take greater responsibility for the online hate published on their platforms."
An award-winning show car has been crushed after being botched together from a range of parts stolen across the West Midlands. Traffic officers from West Midlands Police stopped the bright green BMW M3 Estate on Dartmouth Middleway in Birmingham on November the 15th last year. Their suspicions were raised due to the fact that BMW has never made an estate version of the car. It was seized for inspection and they later found the vehicle, which had been showcased at a car show in Germany, was a death trap made from at least four cars. Parts were traced to one BMW M3 stolen on September the 30th, 2019, from a car showroom in All Saints, Wolverhampton, and another M3 stolen on March the 20th, 2018, in Sutton Coalfield. Two estate vehicles had been used to create the main body and the panoramic roof. The car has now been shredded at a specialist scrapyard, with police urging people to look for telltale signs that can help them avoid buying a car like this. PC Mark Weaver from the Central Motorway Police Group said, "This should act as a striking reminder that cars may not be what they seem. You might think you're buying a bargain, but it could be a death trap that cost your life as well as thousands of pounds. This BMW looked great on the outside. You can't fault the paint job, but scratch beneath the veneer and it was just tag welded and structurally unsafe. A coat of paint won't save your life in a collision. Whoever had bodged this car together had gone to significant lengths to try and hide its true identity. Numbers had been ground off and stickers removed, but we have expert vehicle examiners who use techniques to overcome these obstacles."
A solar farm the size of 21 football pitches is set to be built in Wolverhampton to produce power for the city's main hospital. Planners at Wolverhampton Council have recommended the Bowman's Harbour scheme for approval by councillors. Most of the site on Planetary Road, which is a former landfill site plagued by fly tipping and antisocial behaviour, will be converted into 11.5 hectares of solar panels, infrastructure and an access road. When it is operational, the solar farm, a joint project by Wolverhampton Council and the NHS Trust, will produce 6.9 MWP of renewable energy to New Cross Hospital. Members of the authority's planning committee are expected to give the green light to the proposal at a meeting this week. The authority's planning agents, Arcadis, said, "The proposals present an exciting opportunity to contribute significantly towards the energy demands of New Cross Hospital in Wolverhampton, utilising green technology to provide clean, carbon zero and renewable energy. The utilisation of this unused landfill site for the generation of solar energy will prevent the use of the site as currently is the case for antisocial behaviour and fly tipping through the development of the site and the proposed security measures." Planning Officer Philip Walker said, "This development proposal would generate significant levels of renewable energy for use by New Cross Hospital and responds positively to the government's objectives of tackling the causes of climate change and moving to a low-carbon future. It would make an important contribution towards meeting a Wolverhampton-wide target of 2041 for the city to reach net carbon zero."
More than 900 chain stores closed across the West Midlands in the first half of 2021, with others facing a make-or-break few months in their fight for survival. Research from professional services network PricewaterhouseCoopers and compiled by the local data company showed that a total of 929 shops closed in the region between January and June. With 373 shops opening, it has resulted in a net loss of 556 stores from high streets, shopping centres and retail parks. Nationally, an average of 48 chain stores shut each day, with only 19 new ones opening. Across the wider Midlands region, 601 shops opened and 1,511 closed, while the national daily average of closings was 48 compared to 19 openings. Sarah Phillips, PricewaterhouseCoopers partner and consumer markets lead for the Midlands, said, "After an acceleration in store closures last year, coupled with last-minute Christmas tier restrictions and lockdowns extending into 2021, we might have expected a higher number of stores closures this year. Government support has proved to be the lifeline for many to weather the storm and survive the pandemic. The fate of many operators has also been helped by resilience in our consumer spending, including investments in the home throughout lockdown and using enforced lockdown savings for revenge spending when possible."
Are you ready for a mental workout? Well, now it's time for the quiz. Hello, and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. When was Big Ben first heard to strike? Question 2. What happened for the first time on New Year's Eve, 1923? Question 3. How many German bombs hit St. Paul's Cathedral in 1940? Question 4. How heavy is the Angel of the North? Question 5. Who or what owned Stourhead House? Question 6. How much cash is dispensed by cash machines annually in the UK? And this week, we have a bonus question. What did Roger have for lunch? I'll be back later in the show to reveal the answers. But for now, good luck! Now we delve into some more local news. And starting this section off, we have Liz.
A landmark pub which has vanished from its original spot is springing up again at the Black Country Living Museum. The Elephant Castle Pub is the first part of the museum's Forging Ahead project, a 1940s to 1960s town at the attraction in Dudley. Built in 1905, the Elephant and Castle was once a grand Edwardian pub and was seen as a major landmark for those coming into Wolverhampton. Standing on the corner of Stafford Street and Cannock Road, the pub was popular among the migrant community in the city, but fell into disrepair and was demolished in 2001. The work to recreate the pub is part of the museum's plan to create a world-class heritage attraction in the heart of the Black Country, telling a unique story to around 500,000 visitors each year by 2026. John Hughes, project lead for Forging Ahead at the Black Country Living Museum, said, "We are excited to see the Elephant and Castle start to take form, as it will be the first of our historic buildings to open in the 1940s to 1960s town. The pub will play a pivotal role in the museum's community and will welcome thousands of visitors once again. When the build is complete, the next stage will be set dressing the interior, which is why our appeal for pub memorabilia today is vital, so that we are able to tell the story of this beautiful building and bring it back to life." The Black Country Living Museum is currently calling out for any memories prior to 1969 and 1950s to 60s pub memorabilia for the Elephant and Castle. If you can help, email collections at bclm.com or call 0121 557 9643.
The front wall of a house was destroyed when a car smashed into it in the early hours. The front bay window of a home in the Penn area of Wolverhampton was destroyed in the incident early on Sunday morning. Emergency crews rushed to the scene in Worstow's Road. at 1:33 a.m. with firefighters turning out from both Wolverhampton and Bilston stations. The building has since been made safe by the fire service's technical rescue unit. It has not yet been confirmed whether anyone has been arrested in relation to the crash. A spokeswoman for West Midlands Fire Service said, "We had a report of an RTC on Warstone Road. Two appliances attended the scene." The call came in at 1:33 a.m. The incident involved a car which had gone into a ground floor bay window of the property. Our technical rescue team did attend and made sure the building was safe. Images from the scene show the extent of the collision, with scattered bricks and debris on the driveway and in the home. West Midlands Police have been contacted for comment.
An annual awards ceremony celebrating the importance of tourism and highlight the jewels in the West Midlands has officially launched. Leaders in the region have called on businesses to enter the second West Midlands Tourism Awards after a tough year due to the pandemic. They have been set up this year with a focus on celebrating the strength and resilience of the region's economy and how it will bounce back. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of Dudley Council and member of the West Midlands Regional Board for Tourism, said, "The Black Country is home to some of the jewels in the West Midlands tourism offer. From fantastic heritage attractions, which tell the story of the region, to food and drink venues and accommodation. The West Midlands Tourism Awards provide an opportunity for us to raise a glass and pay tribute to the passionate ambassadors whose hard work and great welcome make trips to the region more memorable for our visitors. The Black Country's tourism and hospitality businesses deserve to be recognised, so I hope to see lots of our venues enter and earn their moment in the spotlight." Tourism and hospitality venues across the West Midlands are encouraged to apply to compete for honours in 14 categories, including Large Visitor Attraction of the Year, Experience of the Year, and the Accessible and Inclusive Tourism Award. Becky Frawl, Head of Visitor Attraction at the West Midlands Growth Company, said, "The West Midlands Tourism Awards highlight excellence across the sector. After an incredibly tough time for our region's visitor economy, next year's ceremony will celebrate the efforts of our businesses, which have delivered outstanding service, because the show must go on."
Patients attending a doctor's surgery have been told not to save up problems for a single appointment because they will take up too much time. Lion Health Medical Centre in Stourbridge has stressed the importance of appointments being kept short so as not to take up too much of the doctor's time and keep others waiting. People attending for their long-term conditions review have been warned not to raise multiple issues while in with the doctor and to instead book another slot. The centre said this had been happening due to the difficulty with securing appointments. Many people have faced difficulty in booking appointments to see a doctor during the pandemic. In a message posted on Facebook, the centre said, "We acknowledge that getting an appointment can be frustrating. We are observing that some patients will save up a few problems to discuss in one consultation. We ask that when attending for your long-term conditions review, you do not bring additional items to discuss. These appointments are dedicated to the medical conditions that require an annual appointment, and we have an experienced team who are capable of dealing with these areas within an appropriately timed slot. Presenting with multiple unrelated problems could increase the risk of mistakes being made and will result in a waiting time for the next patient. We want to make sure our clinicians can practice safely and your long-term condition is managed accordingly. So please don't be offended if we ask you to book a separate appointment for a separate problem."
Wolverhampton saw the sharpest increase in new business creation in the West Midlands in the first 6 months of this year. Almost 11 businesses were being created on average in the city every day. Analysis of companies' house data reveals that 1,931 businesses were registered in Wolverhampton between January and June, an increase of 119% from 882 in the same period in 2019. The research for small business lender Iwocca's Small Business Hotspots UK 2021 list found the total number of businesses registered in the UK was more than 340,500. Wolverhampton saw the fifth highest total number of new firms registered out of all West Midlands local authorities, while Dudley's increase was 29%, going from 1,130 to 1,458. The West Midlands had the fourth highest number of new businesses out of all UK regions, with 30,478. London topped the list with 120,338. The sharp increase in the number of business registrations points to a rise in the entrepreneurship as people reassess their work priorities. The number of people on furlough in Wolverhampton dropped by 56% over the first half of 2021 and by 58% across the West Midlands. Whilst many will have returned to their old jobs, the company's house data suggests that a significant number have decided to start their own business. The creation of these new businesses will also provide additional job opportunities and may have contributed to the number of vacancies increasing by 104% in the region since the start of the year. Christoph Risch, Iwaka's chief executive and co-founder, said, "It is fantastic to see the creation of so many businesses during the first half of this year. They are testament to the entrepreneurial spirit which characterises our vibrant economy."
Thanks for that. We have one more block of local news still to come, but now we get to hear about a sporting opportunity. Do you want to learn how to play golf? The Beacon Centre has secured funding for a limited number of 6 one-hour weekly golf coaching lessons to take place at the Mark Butler Golf Academy, based just outside Sedgley.
Hello, I'm a professional at the Mark Butler Golf Academy, Cameron Butler. Today we have a disability session going on. It's what I specialise in, disability golf. Caroline hitting a few balls here.
Caroline, what do you like about your golf sessions with Cameron?
I've been coming for a while and I've really enjoyed it. It's getting out of the house, doing something different.
Fantastic, wonderful.
I also tend to beat myself blind and stuff, starting back up after COVID.
Wonderful.
Like doing cycling on Monday.
Brilliant. Let's see you hit a ball then, Caroline. Wow, fantastic, well done. Okay, so we have funding available, so please get yourself booked on to the MBGA for your golf sessions today.
If you're interested in taking part in this exciting opportunity to learn to play golf in small groups, please contact the Lifestyle team at Beacon on 01902 880 111. For further details. We now have our final block of local news, brought to us by Angela, Ed, Liz, and starting us off, we go over to Christine.
A derelict pub, which has been shut for 7 years and become a magnet for antisocial behaviour, has been sold ahead of an auction. The Rookery Tavern, known locally as The Rook on Wood Street in Wolverhampton, was closed down in late 2014 and has been left derelict. The pub was listed as an asset of community value 6 years ago, but closed soon after. The area has since become overgrown and attracted problems including antisocial behaviour fly tipping. It has previously been known for regularly hosting meetings for the English Defence League and is currently the subject of a planning application for 24 apartments. Bond Wharf had been set to auction off the property with bids starting from the guide price of £299,999, but it was sold before the auction started for an undisclosed amount, the auctioneers confirmed. Plans had been submitted to Wolverhampton Council for the pub to be torn down and replaced by 24 new apartments, but the proposal has not yet been fully approved, although chiefs at the authority have written an in-principle letter of support for the scheme. Colin Totney, Land and Development Surveyor at Bond Wharf, said, "Before the auction, the property was a keenly priced redevelopment opportunity." Mr. Totney said, "This site offers an ideal opportunity for a developer. It sits in the middle of a large residential area with local services including a popular and highly successful local primary school. Planning permission to redevelop the site for homes has already been secured since the pub closed nearly 8 years ago, but this has now expired. The local authority clearly supports the new planning application and the general proposal to provide much needed new housing on the site.
A Black Country Highways chief is supporting a road safety campaign to urge drivers to take caution when passing horses. Dudley councillor Karen Shakespeare recently met with a group of horse riders ahead of a local event organised as part of a national campaign to raise awareness of road safety. The Pass Wide and Slow Ride campaign was first created in 2018 and aims to educate as many people as possible about how to pass horses safely on roads. The local event, which is a series of group rides, will have more than 40 riders taking part throughout the day and is one of 180 taking place nationwide on September the 19th. The hack will go along roads in Stourbridge and also cross the border into South Staffordshire. Riders in high-vis vests, along with walkers and cyclists, will go out along the route at various times throughout the day to raise awareness of the issues horse riders face. Statistics from the British Horse Society show that two horses are killed each week on UK roads, and more than 80% of incidents occur because motorists pass too closely. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "Our roads are there to be shared by everyone, whether it's pedestrians, motorists, cyclists or riders and their horses. From speaking to some of the riders this week, it's encouraging to know that many drivers do take care, but some people fail to take caution, which could have dangerous consequences. If you're out on the roads and pass a horse, please slow down and give them and their rider plenty of room."
The deck chairs were out and the smells of fine food were in the air at a unique outdoor cinema experience. The four-day film and food fest has been offering people across Wolverhampton and the wider area a chance to come to Bantock Park and enjoy a day out watching a film and tasting top quality street food and drink. Film lovers and families were coming through the gates throughout the festival, which started on Thursday and concluded on Sunday, to watch films such as Sonic the Hedgehog, Pretty Woman and The Goonies on deck chairs in front of a big screen. Set in a large area of the city centre park, those attending were able to walk from the film area to the food and drink section, where they could enjoy donuts, pizza, fries with pulled pork and a selection of craft beers. For those attending, the festival was an opportunity to get out and enjoy the sunshine in a beautiful setting. Danielle Bishton was at the festival with her boyfriend Dan Potter and daughter Aisha for a birthday celebration, and the 46-year-old from Finchfield said it was better than she had expected. She said, "My daughter bought the tickets for this event, so we're having a big family celebration here. I think it's amazing and way better than what I thought it would be, and I think it's definitely something they should do again."
Merry Hill has welcomed the annual return of Halloween House, which claims to be the largest Halloween store in Europe. Following a successful spell at the centre over the last 2 years, Halloween House has now added more than 2,000 square foot of retail space, transforming the unit into a megastore for its third appearance at the centre. It stocks spooky costumes, horror masks, makeup and home decorations. The new megastore also includes a selection of large animated props, and shoppers can spot some of their favourite horror movie characters in an eerie graveyard set up in store. Halloween House is on the Upper Mall, near Next, and joins more than 11 new stores that have opened at Maryhill this year, including the world's oldest and largest toy retailer, Hamleys. John Poole, centre manager at Maryhill, added, "We are thrilled to welcome back Halloween House, which has become an annual highlight for our regular shoppers and visitors who travel from all over the West Midlands and beyond. We have even more new brands opening at the centre over the coming months, and with the first phase of our relaunch starting soon, the future for Maryhill continues to look bright. Halloween House will once again transform into Christmas House in November ahead of the festive season."
Dudley Spice Indian Restaurant has made the finals of the prestigious English Curry Awards 2021. The restaurant in New Street has been shortlisted in the Local Restaurant of the Year category of the awards, now in their 10th year. The awards celebrate top Asian curry professionals and businesses, with the shortlist determined by public vote. Muhammad Ali, who runs Dudley Spice with his uncle Muhammad Manan, who is no stranger to awards, said, "It's very good news for us. It's given us a bit of hope despite the tough times we've had." The restaurant, which opened in October 2019, switched to deliveries during the COVID-19 pandemic, and Mr. Ali said it had been heartening to know the service was appreciated by customers. He added, "People that live in Dudley have got great heart, and we've been here nearly 2 years, and people are so polite and helpful. Times have been hard, but our customers have supported us." The awards highlight the growth of the Asian curry sector and recognise the achievements of those who work their hardest to perfect every meal. A number of other restaurants in the Stourbridge and Hales Owen areas also made it to the final, while Balti Towers in Hales Owen, Mozzalicious in Oldbury, Indilux Restaurant in Amblecote, Stourbridge, and Bombay Pickles in Stourbridge have all been shortlisted for the Restaurant of the Year award. Bombay Pickles has also been shortlisted in the Chef of the Year category.
Now we head over to our very own Flashback Roger, who as always has for us a bunch of amazing facts.
Hello everyone. I've dug up a bit of a mixed bag to hit you with this week, and I think that you'll find them as interesting as I did. I hope so anyway. So pin back your lug holes, and I shall kick off with this one. Now then, did you know that Big Ben strikes are heard for the first time on the 11th of July, 1859? Later that year, the bell was found to be fractured. Big Ben is then turned 90 degrees and the hammer size reduced, allowing Big Ben to strike the hours once more. And in 1923, BBC Radio first broadcast Big Ben's chimes to the United Kingdom on New Year's Eve. Then, in 1932, Big Ben's strikes are broadcast internationally for the first time by the Empire, later the World Service, as part of King George V's Christmas broadcast. And still in London, many of us know the famous picture of St Paul's Cathedral amidst the London Blitz in 1940. But did you know that it was actually hit by German bombs twice? The first one caused some damage to the roof and altar, while the second was a larger time-delayed one, which, had it exploded, would have destroyed the cathedral completely. It took 3 days to dig it out and defuse it, and a crater 30 metres wide was created when it was later exploded in marshland. Anthony Gormley's Angel of the North weighs over 200 tonnes and sits on a base of 600 tonnes of concrete anchoring it to the bedrock beneath. The Angel of the North was installed in 1998, and made from weather-resistant steel, it stands testament to the thousands of miners who toiled over the years in the mines that were deep underneath its feet. Did you know that the National Trust property of Stourhead House, that Palladian villa set in its world-famous gardens, was the inspiration for Lady Penelope's residence, Creighton Ward Mansion, in the 1960s puppet series Thunderbirds? And in 2004, Cliveden House in Berkshire was a location for the Thunderbirds movie. Also, Downton Abbey, Harry Potter, Poldark, and Game of Thrones have all shot scenes in these historic houses. Cash machines have been on our streets since 1967, almost 55 years now. Each year, £180 billion are dispensed. These machines nowadays allow us to access many banking services only once available in person in our high street banks, which no doubt is a factor causing the closure of counter services across the country. Well, there you go then. What a range of subjects. Clocks, radios, bombs, angels, puppets, and banks. I surprise myself sometimes. I know that I'd never have got close to guessing how much money was drawn out of cash machines. Oh, that reminds me. I must go and get me pocket money for me lunch. It's fish and chips today. I hope they got batter bits this time. So I'm off. Fingers crossed. Until next week, I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra!
That That certainly was quite a mixed bag you had for us there, Roger. Anyway, now we have a weather update. The weather for this week looks to be a mixed bag, with both rain and sunshine making an appearance. Temperatures are predicted to be steady throughout the week, typically hovering around 18 degrees. UV levels are expected to be low throughout the week. The sunset and sunrise times are 6:54 a.m. for the sunrise and 7:08 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday, 17th of September, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze, with maximum temperatures of 19 degrees. On Saturday, 18th of September, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze, with maximum temperatures of 19 degrees. Moving on to Sunday, 19th of September, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze, with maximum temperatures of 18 degrees. On Monday, 20th of September, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze, with a maximum temperature of 17 degrees. For Tuesday, 21st, and Wednesday, 22nd of September, it's light rain and a gentle breeze, with maximum temperature of 18 degrees. And finally, on Thursday, 23rd of September, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze, with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. So, that's your forecast for the week. Here's hoping you can make the most of it. Now we have our sportsman, Ian, giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Wolves picked up their first win and points of the season as an attacking second-half display dispatched newly promoted Watford. The visitors started well and dominated the ball in the opening stages while creating some half chances. But after failing to make it count, Watford came back fighting and could have taken the lead with some good opportunities. The second half started slowly from both sides before Wolves got back into their stride and began to look after the ball better and push the hosts back into their own half. Eventually, after failing to score from a number of chances, a Fernando Marçal cross following a short corner in the 74th minute was headed into his own net by Francisco Serialta, sending the travelling supporters wild and handing Wolves the lead. Hwang Hee-chan, on his Wolves debut, then added a second goal to secure the 3 points for Wolves and intensify the party atmosphere in the away end. Off the pitch, Bruno Lage is planning to revisit some Wolves transfer targets in January, as he admits he wanted Morgan Gibbs-White to stay at the club. The club brought in 5 signings but missed out on a handful of targets towards the end of the summer window. Lage made it clear last month that he wanted 3 or 4 first-team signings, but only Hwang Hee-chan arrived in that time. Some supporters were left disappointed at no centre-back or centre-midfield signing. Lage insists he wanted quality above quantity. When asked for his thoughts on the window as a whole, Lage said, "We bring in top players to help us, and it was important, with the Traore and Neves rumours, and they stayed. In the end it was good, and now we continue to work. We have the players in our mind to bring to Wolves, and now we wait until January to bring those players to us to improve and create competition. It is a long project, and I have a contract for 3 years. Meanwhile, Gibbs-White left on deadline day for Sheffield United on a season-long loan, with Hwang seen as his replacement in the squad. Lage says he wanted to keep the 21-year-old, but his desire for more first-team minutes is what pushed through the move. Lage added, "I prefer him to stay, but I need to respect the player and Morgan wants to play more. I respect a lot that ambition. I can give chances to improve in training, but I don't negotiate about time on the pitch. So I couldn't make the promise, and in the end the club and him took the decision to go on loan." Albion moved to the top of the Championship, but still put in an underwhelming display to draw at home with Millwall. In what was a game lacking in quality, the Baggies should have gone in at the break 1-0 up, but Carlin Grant saw a penalty saved just seconds before the interval. Valerian Ismail's side did open the scoring shortly after the restart, with Kyle Bartley producing a brilliant header to beat goalkeeper Bartosz Białkowski. Millwall pulled level just minutes later, thanks to a header from Daniel Ballard that was just as impressive as Bartley's. Overall, though, this was a frustrating afternoon for Albion, who constantly sent long balls into the Millwall box. But with a back three full of tall central defenders, the visitors were able to comfortably deal with that threat. And that meant the game, in summary, proved a drab affair, with Albion not showing enough quality to break down their opponents, who came away deserving of their point. In other news, boss Valerian Ismail says Albion are continuing to hold talks with Sam Johnston over a new contract, with both the player and club relaxed about the situation. With his current deal up at the end of the season, Johnston had been expected to leave the Baggies during the summer after shining in the Premier League last term. But a derisory offer of £6 million from West Ham was the only bid Albion received. Since then, Johnston has opened talks with the Baggies over a fresh deal at the Hawthorns, and Ismail said those talks remain ongoing. "It's the same position," the boss said when asked if there was an update with Johnston's contract. "I understand you will ask all the time, but I think that it will take time. I understand Sam's side. I understand the club's side as well. We want, for sure, to have clarity. But at the minute, everything is fine. We are happy with his performances. He is happy."
With an article on the Battle of Britain, which this year sees its 81st anniversary, we have an article from Heather.
Hello, this is Heather with an article about Battle of Britain Day, marked each year on the 15th of September. It is now 81 years since the battle, which saw RAF pilots fighting against the Germans in 1940 for Second World War air supremacy. The Battle of Britain took place in the skies over the United Kingdom in the summer and autumn of 1940. Since then, it has been remembered and commemorated every year across the UK as one of the most important battles of the war. RAF Fighter Command described the Battle of Britain as the most decisive victory over the German Luftwaffe during the Second World War. During the Battle of Britain, pilots were based at around 58 airfields across the UK. Some of the best known of these include Duxford, now home to a branch of the Imperial War Museum, and airfields in the southeast of England such as Biggin Hill and Kenley. Many of the pilots who took part in the battle were very young, with an average age of just 20. They are often known as the few. This name comes from Winston Churchill's famous phrase, "Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few," which recorded the gratitude felt for the pilots' efforts to protect the UK from Hitler's forces. Each year, Duxford Air Show takes place as part of the Battle of Britain commemorations, and London's Westminster Abbey holds a service of remembrance. Last year, 2020, was the 80th anniversary of the battle, but unfortunately, Duxford cancelled its air show due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and an Imperial War Museum Battle of Britain at 80 exhibition could only be seen online, as no visitors were allowed to enter the museum itself. Let's hope that COVID restrictions in 2021 will be reduced enough to allow at least some of the commemorations to take place this September for the 81st anniversary.
Cheers for that piece, Heather. Now, how did you do at the quiz? Well, now's the time to find out. Hello, and here are your answers to this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. When was Big Ben first heard to strike? And the answer? 11th of July, 1859. Question 2. What happened for the first time on New Year's Eve, 1923? And the answer here is, Big Ben's bongs were broadcast by the BBC. Question 3. How many German bombs hit St Paul's Cathedral in 1940? And the answer is 2. Question 4. How heavy is the Angel of the North? And the answer for this one? 200 tonnes. Question 5. Who or what owns Stourhead House? The answer? It's the National Trust. And question 6. How much cash is dispensed by cash machines annually in the UK? And the answer is a staggering £180 billion. And for that bonus question, we asked, what did Roger have for lunch? And the answer for this was fish and chips and batter bits. How did you do? Brilliantly, I'm sure. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that I asked earlier at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a cassette tape player. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we head over to Graham Fisher for another edition of In My Opinion.
Hello. The workman levelling the tarmac on the pavement outside my home looked at me with twinkling eyes as I bribed him unashamedly with a four-pack of lager. "Oh, be jabber, sir," he said with a brogue that I suspect was more for effect than authenticity. "I'll do that for yez, so's I will." Moments later, he was on the driveway as I called out to my mother. "Remember, I always promised you I'd sit you in a roller." How he laughed. A long-held promise was fulfilled, albeit not quite in the way my mother expected, as my quasi-Irish friend posed gleefully for the obligatory photos. Driving a roller, that's a Rolls-Royce, not the road-flattening variant, is for many car enthusiasts the ultimate in motoring indulgence. It is a fabulous experience, the silk-smooth engine gliding the plot along in a sublime cocoon of comfort, where the loudest noise really is the dashboard clock, so unreal as to be surreal. Of course, it doesn't have to be a roller. My other half prefers Bentleys, Aston Martins and TVRs, none of which are likely to be occupying too much of my workshop space any time soon. But we can all dream. Ah, the motor car. No one can remember a time without them being part of our lives. We all have our starting points, and I distinctly recall mine being 1962, a mustard-coloured Austin A35 van. 3661FD allowed my young parents to extend their experiences beyond the range of pedal cycles, buses and trains. The freedom of our car and the open road, with petrol at 3 and 6 pence a gallon, for the uninitiated, that 17.5 pence allowed us to go where and when we wanted, unfettered by timetables and prescribed routes. I fondly remember as an 8-year-old how I sat on a cushion, looking in wonderment out of the rear window as the world sped backwards. My father became an addict, and although we didn't have 2 pennies to rub together at the time, he always found the money to afford a car. He wasn't pretentious by any means, a humble man who left school at 15. His car was hardly the mark of a man above his station. It was how he chose to reward himself for his sheer hard graft and determination to get on in life. It was his badge of office. It is thus no surprise that I should be persuaded by his passion, and I too have been fortunate to enjoy some lovely automobiles. Although I have appreciated the plush luxury of the big stuff, I have long been a devotee of the diminutives, and some that I have owned have been amongst the smallest on the road. Not so when I developed my passion for motorcycles and became an adherent of the American philosophy, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got cubes. Cubic capacity, that is. And gosh, have I ridden some monsters. Not for speed, more the challenge of handling the beasts. After all, it has long been my maxim that if you have exchanged lots of money for a gleaming machine with enough chrome to cover a small asteroid, then the last thing you want to do is drive past people so fast they can't see you. Now that's style. But, and here's an amazing fact, the A35 van my father bought in the 1960s, the cars he subsequently owned, the fire-breathing behemoths I have ridden, all have one thing in common. The 4-stroke internal combustion engine. I am unilaterally dismissing the 2-stroke expressions, nasty spitting contrivances that may be fine in gardening tools, but for me have little merit in road vehicles. Or diesel engines, like millions of others, I was conned by our government, yes, I stand by the word conned, into going diesel by the lure of greater longevity and cheaper fuel, only to now being made to feel socially irresponsible every time I fill my tank with particulates. Then there's the rotary engine, A curious animal, if ever. Popularised by the West German NSU RO80 saloon of the 1960s and the Japanese Mazda rotary that featured in several of its sports cars, they were also developed by Norton Motorcycles and raced with some success. As I recall, the bike attracted debate as to whether the swept volume of the rotor, depending on how it was measured, amounted to 600 or 1200 cc. I rode one once. It was blisteringly crisp, but to me, it was no 1200. Then there is the quirkily eccentric Stirling, or external combustion engine. I think I'll leave you to look that one up for yourself. Yet let me not digress with these diversions. The bulk of the world's motor cars have been and still are powered by a device that has its roots deep in Victorian times. The materials may have changed, the efficiency improved, the fuel system modified, the emissions lessened, the electrics upgraded, the whole unit controlled by more computing power that put man on the moon. But in essence, the internal combustion engine in your car is based on a principle first developed by a French engineer, Alfonso Beau de Rocha, following a patent in 1861. Numerous famous names sprang up on the subsequent explosion of car manufacturers. Many fell by the wayside, but some are still there with us from those halcyon times. Mercedes-Benz, 1883. Skoda, 1895. Renault, 1899. Fiat, also 1899, Cadillac, 1901. It's quite a list. From our comfortable leather seats, heading at 70 miles an hour along a tarmac motorway, we can reflect in bemusement to the time when it was a legal requirement to travel at no more than 4 miles per hour, accompanied by someone walking in front carrying a red flag. Though regulations were gradually relaxed, until 1935 you didn't even need a license to do so. The four-stroke cycle is also called the Otto cycle, after the German Nikolaus Otto, who used spark plugs to fire cylinders in an order of induction, compression, ignition and exhaust. To avoid excess vibration, four-cylinder cars have commonly worked on a cylinder firing sequence of 1, 2, 4, 3, with the up and down movement of the pistons being converted to reciprocal motion of a flywheel via the crank. This is astonishing, and worthy of just pausing a moment to reflect that despite advances in nuclear energy, hydrogen fuel cells, solar panels, lithium batteries, and a whole raft of wonderful technological advances, that gleaming modern four-wheeled thingy with all the bells and whistles parked in your garage right now is still powered by a device that has remained fundamentally unchanged in over 160 years. That statistic alone is probably ample justification for why its time is coming to a close. The denouement, the time when internal combustion engine cars will no longer be available in the UK, was set some months ago at the year 2040, long enough for us all to get used to it. So, it came as a jolt to be told that it has been brought forward to 2030. With hybrids phased out by 2035. Gosh, that's almost tomorrow. The internal combustion engine, or at least its incarnation in cars and motorcycles, has in fact been under threat for almost as many years as it has existed. Lobbyists for just about everything from noise, congestion, pollution, antisocial behaviour, industrial relations, road safety. Bridget Driscoll, having the distinction of being the first recorded pedestrian to be killed by an automobile in 1896, even religion and politics have protested in some way right from the days that Henry Ford declared of his Model T in 1909, any customer can have a car painted any colour that he wants, so long as it is black. The Model T only came in black so the production line efficiency could be improved. Even in those pioneering days, the economics of production were paramount. Car production has survived the tirades, so it is somewhat ironic that its demise has been heralded, not so much by humankind's objections, but nature's interventions in the way of fossil fuel depletion, pollution and global warming, none of which were remotely on the horizon back in Henry's prime. In the meantime, the magnificent motor car has become so ingrained as a fundament of our very existence that this side of it happening it is hard to envisage it not being so anymore. One investment company newsletter recently described it as automotive Armageddon. Still, I suppose they said that at the end of the age of steam. But it is disheartening to imagine that from fashion to film, remember the breathtaking car chase featuring Steve McQueen in Bullet that's been reinterpreted numerous times since but never bettered. From functional transport to sumptuous statement of wealth, it will all be no more. And there is no question that something indefinable will be lost forever. As for the new order, the prospective concomitant issues of battery manufacture and disposal, charging infrastructure and upgrade of the national grid already disturb me greatly. But they are for another day. Existing internal combustion cars will survive for many years, though I predict they will eventually become the prerogative of enthusiasts much as the aforementioned steam, traction engines, beam pumps and the Flying Scotsman are now the stuff of legend. Perhaps one day you too will find yourself in a museum pointing out to your grandkids what was once your favourite old jalopy. So I leave the final word to one who has already expressed it all so eloquently. Jeremy Clarkson, formerly of BBC's Top Gear, until an ignominious fall from grace following his assault on a producer, is nonetheless a talented broadcaster. For the conclusion of the 13th series in 2009, he presented a minor masterpiece of emotive prescience, not so much a programme as 4 minutes of mellifluous artistry. Picture the scene, glorious rolling isolated scenery, with a single track road passing not a building nor living soul save for frolicking deer. A gleaming pearlescent silver vehicle of demonically sensuous lines, purring around corners and roaring on straights, all accompanied by pacifying music from the maestro of the ethereal, Brian Eno. A pensive Clarkson at the wheel glances towards the camera in tacit acknowledgement. Well, it's an Aston Martin Vantage with a V12 engine. So what do you think it's going to be like? More music, more scenery, more purring and roaring, Clarkson's voice again. It is fantastic. It is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. What it makes me feel, though, is sad. I just can't help thinking that thanks to all sorts of things, the environment, the economy, problems in the Middle East, the relentless war on speed, cars like this will soon be consigned to the history books. I just have this horrible, dreadful feeling that what I am driving here is an ending. More music, more scenery, more purring and roaring, before a clearly wistful Clarkson in a masterclass of minimalist commentary that left one pondering whether he was closing a series or foreshadowing the end of an era, simply says, good night.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!